Well, welcome to Dairy Livestream. I'm your host, Corey Geiger, managing editor of Hordes Dairymen. We are broadcasting from the Cheese Cave, our studio in downtown Fort Atkinson at the historic W.D. Horde & Sons Company building commissioned by Wisconsin governor and founder of Hordes Dairymen, W.D. Horde. Our conversation today will focus on a hot topic. We have new tools to breed more profitable cows. During this conversation, we will not only talk genetics, but feed efficiency, sustainability, milk markets, and of course, farm profitability. For those of us joining us live, please share with your friends that this webcast will be available on our Hordes Dairymen YouTube channel this Thursday, tomorrow. Dairy Livestream is also available in podcast form on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you'd like to listen to a podcast. Search for Dairy Livestream from the convenience of your smartphone. Starting this August, dairy producers will have at their disposal an enhanced lifetime net merit index. It's NM dollars. You'll see that abbreviation many times in different outlets. This selection tool is designed to maximize a cow's lifetime profitability. That's why there's a dollar number on it. Since its introduction in 1994, net merit has been periodically updated to account for new traits, new research, and the most updated dairy market information. This 2021 revision is the most significant in a long time because three new traits have been added and important updates to economic weights have been made. Before we hear from our first panelist, Yao Derb, let's go to our first poll question. What traits help improve feed efficiency in the net merit formula? Residual feed intake, RFI, body weight composite, BWC, both A and B, or none of the above. So go ahead and answer that question as you will close that poll off. And we got a strong response there. 80% picked both A and B. So let's talk more about this comprehensive index. To lead out that discussion, it's my pleasure to invite Yao Derb to Dairy Livestream. Yao has an impressive animal breeding background, having studied dairy cattle genetics in both Brazil and Canada. After being a professor for nearly a decade, Yao became director of Interbull based in Sweden. Interbull is the international agency that essentially translates genetic evaluations so AI sires from one country can be compared to another country's genetic evaluation system. Think of it as converting US dollars to British pounds or vice versa. For the past 7 years, Yao has served as CEO of the Council for Dairy Cattle Breeding. That organization oversees all U.S. genetic evaluations. Yao, welcome to Dairy Livestream. Let's talk net merit.
Thank you, Corey. It's a pleasure to be here and to share a little bit of our thoughts about this exciting update that we're having on net merit. So net merit is the main product of CDCB and it's calculated by USDA. It's created by USDA and calculated by CDCB. And basically, the idea is that we want to select the most profitable cow that we can have in our commercial herds in the U.S. And this has been evolving since 94, as you pointed out before. As we know more about the traits and as we have more information available and research advances, we add more traits. So this latest revision, basically, we added three new traits. One is early first calving. So we want we know that our heifers are calving earlier than before. Heifer livability. So we want our heifers to be healthier and survive and be profitable later on, and feed saved. So feed saved is the combination, as the question showed, of residual feed intake and as well as body weight composite. So the idea is that we can provide a tool for all farmers to select the animals that will be not only have a higher production, but also be healthier, stay longer in the herd, and now be more efficient. So feed efficiency is really the big novelty here. And we have to acknowledge the fact that feed costs are one of the most important costs in the dairy farm. And addressing that by selecting the cows that are more efficient, in other words, that the ones that produce the same amount of milk and eat less, this is really something that will have a very big impact on the dairy activity. So the idea is that we are going to have cows that are able to survive, to produce well, and also get this production based on less resources. So the genetic progress that is going to, that is expected from this new formula is higher than the one that we had before. And as I think Chad will say something about it also, it doesn't mean that we, what we were doing before was not right. No, we were going already in the right direction. But now we have more information, better data, so the direction of our selection is more fine-tuned, let's say. We are going to the direction that we know now is more adequate for our population. NetMed has been driving progress in the U.S. population and is also very much accepted in many parts of the world where U.S. genetics is basically the main source of genetic improvement in dairy herds. So we are really excited about that, and we hope that we will have some good discussion.
Thank you, Zhao. Before we hear from our next panelist, Lloyd Holterman, let's go to another poll question. Productive life, how long a cow stays in the herd, was updated how? So your options are all lactations are equal, average credit for a 365-day lactation, assumes different profits as cows age, all of the above, or none of the above. And this is in reference to genetic evaluations, calculating net merit. We continue to learn more, and so we'll give everybody a little bit here. This is one of the more challenging poll questions that we've asked in some time, but I think it's really important here as we think about cows, and we'll tip my hand a little bit as they mature. So we'll give everybody about 10 more seconds there to answer that. And Caitlin, let's go ahead and cut that poll question off. And Lloyd, the correct answer to this question I know is near and dear to your heart when it comes to animal breeding. The right choice is C, assumes different profits as a cow age. And that's a recent change as well. So we welcome Lloyd Holterman to Dairy Livestream. Lloyd and his wife Daphne and their business partners Tim Strabel and Jordan Matthews own and operate Rosie Lane Holsteins of Watertown, Wisconsin. It's just about 30 minutes north of where I'm broadcasting from here. And Lloyd has been a great student of both farm profitability and genetics. And we invite him to Dairy Livestream because his Rosie Lane Holsteins has transformed their herd by using the net merit formula. Lloyd has shared his insight with the greater dairy industry and dairy community in many ways over the years, including he now serves as chair of the 5-farmer member producer advisory committee. And that advisory committee gives advice to the board of directors for the Council of Dairy Cattle Breeding. Lloyd, welcome to Dairy Livestream, and please share your thoughts on the net merit.
Well, thank you, Corey. As you pointed out, we've been using net merit as our primary selection criteria ever since 1994. And over the years, we have improved our herd in every metric. We've reduced body size because of the negative influence body size in the net merit formula. Cows are milking more than before, maybe more management because net merit had a kind of a zero rating on milk production over the years if you averaged it out. However, our fat and protein, both in percentages and pounds, have dramatically increased, and we've reduced our overall herd health cost. And if we, the biggest reason we switched from our previous selection criteria in 1994 was we wanted cows to live longer. So productive life was heavily had the heaviest weighting in net merit as compared to the other indexes that we could choose from. So we really are excited now with adding the feed saved with the research that's being done. And I anticipate that over the years, as we get more data, the weightings may change slightly, but we're going to make more progress in developing margin cows. And the margin cows, farms run on operating margins, and margin cows are near and dear to my heart. To be a margin cow, you have to produce a lot of fat and protein. You need to get bred back, and you need to resist mastitis and lameness. Those are the most important things. Now, smaller cows eat less. If we can get a smaller cow to produce as much or more, we will make more profit. And so I'm really excited in the addition of heifer livability, because heifer raising is one of the major costs on a dairy farm. Whether they're custom raised or you raise them yourselves, it's a major cost. And now adding heifer livability will improve our non-completion rates genetically on the farm and make everything go better and easier.
Lloyd, we're going to take a question early here because I think you're best to answer this, and we may come back to it in the second half of the program here. But what I really like about the conversation today is we got those that love dairy cattle breeding and genetics, and we got bankers on this call and those that are in the processing community. And so one of the questions that came in right when you were talking, I'm a lender. Help me work through this. How would I, as a lender, put a value on a borrower that puts more emphasis on net merit or has a higher genetic value herd? What questions should I be asking, or what data should I be getting from a farmer client on this? And I think that's a really big picture question, and it's an important one. And Lloyd, you've studied this as much as any dairyman that I know. So why don't you take the first crack at that one?
Our processing center for DHIA calculates the average genetics, and if you don't genomic test, they will take your parent average, which I think on a herd level is fairly accurate, and can't really argue with that. I think, let's just say one herd, the milking females average 400 net merit, and the other herd is herd at zero. That $400 will come back to you over the lifetime of each cow. So if you have a 400 cow or a 1,000 cow herd, over a period of say 4 years, you should be able to add $100,000 of revenue, of net revenue each year, because say you're averaging 4 lactations with a 25% cull rate. That's really critically important because you have to spend a lot of money trying to manage the problems out of these cows. To breed a better cow genetically so you don't have the problem, that's our goal. Breeding using net merit, we're on about our 9th generation now. We've been using it 27 years, and it's allowed us to go the last 6 years without using antibiotics in our milking females. So our mastitis incidence very low. Our fertility is great. We averaged a 4.2 fat last year with 30,000 pounds of ship milk with a 4.2 fat test and a 3.2 protein. Even 6 or 7 years ago, we were not achieving those metrics. Our feed efficiency has improved over the years, which is all goes to the bottom line. So genetics is probably the most underestimated part of dairy management. People just, look at the grain farmers, a bag of seed corn is really important to them, but we just seem to think that a dairy cow is a dairy cow, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Thank you, Lloyd. And we're going to allow Chris Yao and Chad to have a kick at that question too in our second half, but I wanted to follow up right away on that. So we're going to go straight to another poll question, and we're going to hear from Chad Dekow next from Penn State University. What breed or breeds have direct measures for RFI, which is residual feed intake, and BWC body weight composite? Ayrshire, Brown Swiss, Holstein, Jersey, or all of the above? So go ahead and answer that question. And Caitlin will cut that poll off here so we can hear from Chad. The correct answer to that is actually right now at the moment, Holstein. And right the residual feed intake part is really expensive data to collect. Now we can do body weight composite on all the breeds, but so there's a little bit of different here. We welcome Chad Deckow to Dairy Livestream. Chad joined the Penn State faculty in 2003. Chad's research program has focused on improvement of dairy cattle, cow health and well-being as we continue to breed for higher levels of fat and protein yield and overall production efficiency. Through his research, Chad has demonstrated that genetic selection for stable body weight and body condition can help maintain high levels of cow health and high yielding and efficient dairy cows. Chad easily relates to both students and farmers alike at Penn State. He teaches 5 courses and coaches the state's 4-H dairy cattle judging team. For the great many readers of Hordes Dairymen around the world, they will know that Chad has been co-authoring the artificial breeding column for 10 years now. Chad, the net merit formula is on a constant journey. What's your take on that journey and evolution?
Thanks, Corey, for that introduction. And what I'd like to do is first, we're talking about net merit as an economic selection index. And I want to just briefly start out by talking about what does that mean? Because I think when we look at the formula, we see, okay, for example, about 20% of the emphasis is placed on protein yield. Well, where did that 20% come from? And what separates net merit from most other types of indexes is that we actually don't start with 20%. We start by deriving economic values, and then the 20% is just kind of what happens in the end. So for instance, we try to project what a pound of protein will be worth in the future, and currently we're projecting about $2.39. We subtract from that how much it costs to feed a cow to get that extra pound of protein. So that leaves us with about $1.73. And then since it's a lifetime index, we've got about 2.7 lactations typically per cow. So we multiply that together and we get $4.67. And that's the number that goes into the net merit formula. We do the same thing for all the other traits. Productive life, we give value to the fact that we don't have to raise as many heifers. If we have cows that live longer, for instance, we place a value on fertility. And then we put all those numbers together, and that number that we see at the end of 20% emphasis on protein is a function of the economic value of all the different traits. So that's where I wanted to start, was by emphasizing that net merit is an economic selection index where we're really trying to determine the total value of the cow across her lifetime. And so the second thing that I want to emphasize is that it's really important that we select on a multiple trait selection index like net merit and not on an individual trait. And I'll give you one example as it relates to feed saved. I know that a lot of people are really excited about this new emphasis to select for feed efficiency. And feed saved is our measure of feed efficiency. But if I told you that we had a 1,000 pound cow that ate less than we expected, she would probably be the world leader in feed saved because she's just a small cow that's not eating very much. But if I told you she made 10 pounds of milk per day, I think we'd all agree that's an absolutely horrible cow and she's not going to be economically efficient. So that's why we practice multiple trait selection index and not single trait selection index. We want to make sure that we're emphasizing all the traits that have economic importance. And as both Corey and Zhao have mentioned, this index has evolved over time, really starting in the mid-1990s. And each time we add a new trait, we don't completely change the direction we're heading. We just refine where we're going a little bit. And so for this particular iteration, we're adding lots of new exciting traits, especially we're putting more direct emphasis on feed efficiency. But we've in the past put a negative weight on body size, and we already discount how much yield our cows yield by the feed cost to obtain that yield. So in the end, we're probably, it's not as dramatic of a change as you might expect. We'll be, I think the numbers are that we're saving the industry about $8 to $9 million of feed per year, which when you think about the number of cows we're milking, that's about a $1 per cow per year change that this formula is making compared to the previous formulas. So it's an important improvement, but I just want to emphasize that it's just one step in a long process. And this step is the first time we're going to have direct evaluations for feed efficiency. And that's going to continue to improve over time as well. And I'll just give you one example where I think we really need to make changes in the future. And that's the emphasis on body weight. Body weight is a really complex trait. And you can have a tall, thin cow that weighs the exact same thing as a short, fat cow. But those cows have very different metabolic processes. And so we need to start moving away from body weight at this weight of emphasis in our index, because there's concern that, you know, thin cows weigh less, but thin cows have other problems as well in terms of fertility and so forth. So if there is a concern about the new formula, it's simply that we are putting some indirect pressure on selecting cows that are a little bit thinner. And so hopefully over time, we'll start to decouple how much is a cow, a tall, thin cow eat versus a short, fat cow, and then we'll be able to even refine our index and make even faster progress than we are now. But that's not to dismiss the changes that are being made this time around. It's simply to emphasize that there's always going to be continual improvements and refinements, but the general direction we're heading isn't necessarily different.
Thank you, Chad. And, you know, this part on the feed side of this here, without the study of genomics, and which is the study of DNA and putting it back to how what actual cows in the population do, we probably couldn't have done that, because we're taking this and we're extrapolating probably about 6,000 cows roughly over a population. So we have some great powerful tools that we can use now that really brought this about. Is that not correct, Chad?
That's absolutely correct. And when we started going down this path of feed efficiency, we understand how genomic selection works a lot better now. And probably the biggest surprise is how much data that it really takes to make genomics work. So that's really what we're working on now, is trying to build our database so that we can make that selection for feed efficiency be that much more effective.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to go to one more poll question here before we hear from Chris Wolf. And our final question is this. Yeah, what is the relative emphasis for production traits in net merit formula? So there's 100% obviously in the formula. So you can pick 8.5, 28.5, 48.5, 68.5, or 88.5. And Chris is one of our regular contributors to the Dairy Livestream. He certainly studies farm finances and the milk markets a great deal. So we're going to have Chris talk about this portion of it. And the answers are coming in fast and furious here. We'll give everybody about 10 more seconds to cast their ballots, and then we will bring this up. And Chris actually has a unique background here, in so much that he was at Michigan State for a number of years, and some of the feed work here, feed efficiency, came out of Michigan State. Other universities also contributed. So he was on two PhD dissertations on this project. So he's got a unique background on that. Caitlin's going to get the answer to that poll question up here. And the correct answer is 48.5%, because at the end of the day, we cash milk checks for those of us who are milking cows for a living. So Chris, and again, that formula is 28.6% of it's on fat, 19.6% or 20%, if we're going to round the numbers, Chad said, is on protein, and just 0.3 on milk, because actually the water in milk doesn't, it's just a trucking bill, really. So, of course, that ratio is based on the milk markets. So talk a little bit more about that and the entire net merit formula. Welcome, Chris.
Hi. Thanks, Corey. Happy to be here again. I was fortunate enough to work with some dairy scientists at Michigan State on some of these issues, and I learned a lot. I don't know how much I contributed, but I certainly learned a lot. And, you know, I think I'm probably biased, obviously, spending my time at a university, but I think one of the big success stories of all this kind of stuff is the collaboration that happens between the, organizations like CDCB and universities and working together to figure out and do this really intensive data collection and analysis, which was certainly the case with that residual feed index. It was a whole lot of work for the team that was involved there. Milk yield and component increase in the United States have been a real success story that have been facilitated by management tools like the genetics that we're talking about today. And these increases in yield and components are an important part of the long-term sustainability for U.S. dairy. I think something that the general public probably should appreciate more than they do. So net merit, as Chad was talking about, is a genetic index that simplifies the process of selecting sires based on some combination of economically important traits, and it estimates lifetime profit based on incomes and expenses that are relevant to today's dairy farmers. And I really interesting looking at the history over time that net merit and other indices that are used here have evolved based on a combination of scientific knowledge, like the research that I was just referring to, management, technology and practices, and then economic and market factors, such as when we move to multiple component pricing. And, you know, you could see the effect. It got adjusted in the net merit to reflect the fact that we are, you know, shipping protein and butterfat, at least in the multiple component orders. And there's other indices, right, that you might want to use if you're in a skim fat order. And so the evolution of adding these production traits, classification traits, and health and fitness traits has been an important part of this story. And so most recently, the emphasis has been on feed efficiency and feed saved based on those university studies and other collaboration. And that reflects the importance of feed as the single most largest expense in producing milk, and also reflects this increasing focus on sustainability, such as the discussions that we're having and likely to continue to have on greenhouse gas emissions. And so the efficiency is really important there, so, right? And a majority of the milk in the U.S. goes through federal orders, and 7 of the orders pay component prices. And so that's where we come up with those weights that both Chad and Corey were talking about, with 28.6% of fat, 19.6% of protein, only 0.3% of milk. And again, you're, especially with component pricing, you're getting paid on components. And if we bring in the base excess programs, then you certainly want to increase those components per unit of milk that you're shipping if you're constrained in some of these programs like you are in the part of the country that I'm in right now. The value of these components, you can look at the literature, it changes over time based on US DA and other longer term forecasts. We've certainly had a lot of volatility in component prices in the last few years. You know, for a long time, you know, protein was the driver of the milk check. And then for 5 years or so here, we had fat really driving the milk check. But in 2020, we kind of had a lot of volatility, and you can see that more weight for 2021 was put back on protein, as it should be, I think, reflecting the market situation we're in here. So anyway, the net merit, I think, is a really useful tool for predicting the performance here. And it's really important management tool that producers can continue to use when they're considering a combination of economically important traits.
And thank you, Chris. And Chris alluded to that. There's the net merit formula, which is really the formula for across the country and those breeders around the world that want to look at compare bulls. But if you are in that skim milk or skim fat order, such as Florida or those in the Southeast, there's an index called fluid merit. It does a lot of the health traits and other things, but it doubles down on the value of milk because those are heavy class one markets, beverage milk. Now, if you're a breeder in, say, Wisconsin, that's over probably 90% cheese, or California is a big cheese state, you may want to double down and say components are worth even more. Then you'd probably want to use cheese merit, and that's the index that I've turned to over the years because I believe Wisconsin's going to keep making a lot of cheese. So those are some different things there. And I did have a dairyman call me this morning, and Chris talked about the base excess plans here, and, you know, but it depends on your market. You're not getting paid for the fluid part if you're in the Northeast right now. You're getting charged, dinged if you ship more milk than you did in previous years. So this is an ebb and flow. But what we're trying to do is look at the long-term horizon and see where dairy cattle breeding is going to be. So we're going to go to our Q&A portion of the program. I'd like to remind all our viewers here that if you have a question, go use the GoToWebinar control panel and ask that question. I'm going to come back, circle back here. Lloyd got to answer that one question first here. And I'm going to ask Chris if he wants to add to it, and then Zhao or Chad, because this is a really important one, I think, here, because Lloyd is absolutely right here. You know, some there's been more interest in genetics than ever before because of genomics. I think there's more conversations because of that. But there are still farms who will spend way more money on their seed corn or alfalfa. And I think that's about the, while those are important, if you're a dairyman or dairywoman, your milk check better be your biggest source of income. So, Chris, the question again is, how would a lender put a value on a borrower that puts more emphasis on genetics or net merit? And what questions should that lender be asking or looking for in that herd?
Well, that's a good question, Corey. I think, you know, one place when I'm thinking about it that is really going to show up and is the milk price that you receive. Because you can, you know, when we look at the different herds, when we're looking at the herd financial summaries that we work with, you know, first of all, the financial performance varies pretty greatly across farms. Well, and sometimes it's a one-off situation that affected a farm. But, you know, milk price also varies a whole lot, reflecting those component differences. And so I think that's one place it's really going to show up in is in the milk price received. And, you know, just like farmers are solving a multi kind of factorial problem, so are the lenders, right? And they're thinking about all these different factors and how they weight them coming in. But I think the management ability and the milk price received, and that's going to definitely work through into the profitability measures on the farm. And certainly I would think help with the risk rating that any lender is going to do.
Joe or Chad?
Yeah, I would just want to say this thing that we have been repeating for ages is that the gains in genetics are permanent. So you have the potential there, and if you obviously need the environmental variables to help, but if you don't have the potential in the cows, then you cannot really extract what you want. So the idea of having a selected group of cows that are able to respond to the management will allow you to adapt to different conditions that you have.
That's well said, Joel, because if you buy a bag of seed corn, that's a one-off year and that you're done, and you're building here. You're building. Chad?
So I guess what I would emphasize is that we are in an industry that works on margins, and having better genetics gives you a better margin compared to your competitor herds that have poorer genetics. I don't think there are any herds that have terrible genetics, because we've done such a good job of genetically selecting. The breeding companies are in intense competition that's as intense as the dairymen are in. So that the products they provide are all pretty good. So there are some herds that don't necessarily pay attention too much to their genetics, but they are willing to invest in it, and they still end up with pretty good genetics. But having elite genetics does give you a marginal advantage compared to your competitors, and we're in a marginal industry.
So the next question here we got from a longtime viewer of Dairy Livestream here before the webcast. And maybe we'll start with Chad or Chris on this one. The reader or the viewer writes in, "I've seen several reports of individual Holstein herds with average butterfat over 4%. It was unheard of 30 years ago. These herds have have these herds increased their breeding emphasis on fat yield relative to milk yield? Or have they made some kind of change in the herd's nutrition? Or is it some of each?" And as we set that question up, I want to, if you look at the federal milk marketing order data, and again, that's about 92% of the milk in the U.S. goes through a federal order, butterfat levels have gone up from 3.66% in 2010 on a gradual trajectory to 2020 last year to 3.95%. So that's the biggest change in one decade in U.S. dairy history. So what's taking place there? I know Chad will probably want to comment, or Chris and Lloyd Zhao, but let's start with Chad or Chris on that one.
Well, real quickly, I'm of the opinion that it's definitely both management and genetic. We have been really placing a lot more emphasis on fat yield and protein yield as opposed to milk yield over the last two decades, and that has shifted. Genetically, our cows now just have higher concentration of fat percentage. So that's a big part of it. There are feeding changes. Palmitic acid, for instance, has become a lot more popular. So it's always about the environment and nutrition matching each other, nutrition and genetics matching each other, excuse me. And I think that we've done a really good job of that. And that's why we're seeing that increase.
Right. So, Corey, so I'm sure these guys know more about the genetics and nutrition than I do. And it seems to me, obviously, Chad talks about two decades. That's, you know, basically the exact amount of time that we've had the multiple component pricing like we do now. And, you know, farmers are responding to incentives to increase those components. And like you mentioned, you know, more milk, you pay a hauling cost per hundredweight. You don't, you know, pay based on your component percentages that are in there. But one thing that you definitely see is that all orders have had increasing components, and butterfat is the one that really jumps out. Protein also, right? Because there's some jointness between them. But when we think about pricing in federal milk marketing orders, one way that that's showed up is that in multiple component orders, so those seven orders that use it, the components get paid first at class three values. And if we have high class three prices, particularly 2020 was one which was extremely high, then that leaves less money in what's called the producer price differential, right? And so the negative producer price differentials that we saw in 2020 were extreme, but the long-term trend in producer price differentials is definitely downward because of the component values going up, because of utilization and some other factors too. But, you know, there's definitely an incentive to have a focus on this management aspect and have higher components.
Yeah, you've been in the U.S. here for 7 years, but seen the international stage for a lifetime. What's your take on it?
Well, in Brazil, I also work in milk recording and milk quality. And it's definitely a reaction to the market. I mean, once you have the incentive for the producers to improve a given trait, such as fat percent and protein percent, they will respond. And net merit is not by accident that is incentivizing those things, because net merit is exactly reflecting what the market is signalizing to the producer. So I think we see here that the theory is working. I mean, we have a system in which we are telling the producers, we want more fat, we want more components in milk, we don't want so much water in milk. We provide the tools that allow the producers to make progress in those traits, and they respond. So I think this is really showing that every step in the way has been taken, and the consequences are what we expected it would be. So I think it's a very good success story that we have in our hands here to show that we are allowing this industry to evolve, to be more productive, be more efficient, and achieve the goals that the industry has.
And Lloyd, you talked about your herd producing about 30,000 pounds of milk with a 4.2 butterfat, but that's obviously changed over the years. Talk about your specific herd story.
Well, we set out to breed a black and white Jersey with twice the yield. And the reason we stick with Holsteins instead of going to Jerseys is that every time a Holstein walks in there, they have the potential to drop about 30% more fat and protein or components with at each milking. That reduces your labor costs. The problem with Holsteins in the past was calving ease and fertility. And the net merit formula addressed that very early on. And the result was longer lasting cows with better fertility and more margin. As you can see, maybe 10 years ago even, we were getting up to $2 volume premium. Those premiums are gone. And they're actually paying $2 plus the trucking. Now we're paying the trucking and we're getting Chicago Board of Trade prices minus PPD. That's dramatically changed. Our breeding program actually did go in the right direction early on by choosing net merit, and I think that we can look forward to that even improving more. So things have really changed on the milk, as you all alluded to, but setting out, we always say, a black and white Jersey with twice the yield and without the milk fever. So, you know, being a little sarcastic, but that's it's really working out nicely.
And Lloyd, during dress rehearsal, you brought up the fertility issue, and it really, this is across really all breeds, the improvement that's been made. But in one of my roles in the industry for a number of years, I've been chair of the Dairy Cattle Reproduction Council's award committee. And a decade ago, if somebody had a 30 preg rate, you would be in the running for the best herds in the country. And now if you have a 30% preg rate, bless you. I mean, that's still a good, great number. But when it comes to that awards competition, you're not even sniffing the top end, where we got herds of 40 plus. And You have a high number there too, and talk a little bit about your change in fertility.
I think that takes multiple generations, and by breeding for productive life, and when daughter pregnancy rate came out, we seized right on that because open cows are the leading reason of culling across the world. I mean, we can talk about lameness and udders and cell counts and mastitis, but open cows are the enemy of profitability. And so, and that the DPR leads to longer lived cows. The first thing you have to do is get the cow bred back. Now with breeding for fertility a long time, plus the technologies out there, this last year, we're over a 40 preg rate for the first time in our history. And it wasn't that long ago, say 2013, 2014, we're at about a 20 preg rate, and we've doubled it. And our conception rate is like 58% across all breedings, which is, I would have never dreamed we could make that kind of progress. But it takes generations, and you know, you have to keep your eye on the prize in your breeding program. So we select the highest net merit bulls, but if a bull's really poor on fertility, we kind of go by that one, I guess, and or low on productive life. If they're getting it from production only or major production, we tend to go by those and pick the bulls that will sire longer lived cows, because we're finding our cows they produce the most milk on fifth lactation. In other words, our cows are maturing at fifth lactation. The average cow in the country is 2.7. We have to fix that right away. That's the only way we're going to achieve a lower carbon footprint, higher production, and wider margins. That is really job one, is get a higher percentage of these cows. And now 55% of our cows are actually fourth lactation and greater, not third lactation and greater, but fourth, because we've put the emphasis where it needed to be to get these cows to live longer.
And for those in our milk processing and lending community out there, when Lloyd says 58% conception rate, that means if he bred 100 cows on in any given window, 58% of them became pregnant. That is phenomenal. So the next question, we're going to start with Jao or Chad on this one, and it leads right in, actually. It's almost like Lloyd reading my computer. A question came in from California. What specifically was adjusted to make productive life better reflect profitability as cows age? When were or will these changes be included and compiled in the productive life values? Well, I'm assuming they're going to be included in August, but I let's turn that over to Jao and Chad. They know better than I.
Okay, so it basically better accounts for maturity effects. So acknowledging the fact that we have in each lactation, the cow will have, let's say, will produce different amounts and will have different costs and margin, profitability margins as well. So basically, that's what in this edition we are doing is to account for better account for the maturity effects than we were doing before.
And my understanding, and Jao can correct me if I'm wrong, is that we actually haven't changed productive life per se, but we've changed how many lactations we're assuming that a cow produces in the net merit formula. So a high productive life cow gets credits for more lactations than a bull's daughters with low productive life. So it's not a change of productive life per se, is so much as how we're using productive life in the formula.
Yeah, not the definition of the trait. That's exactly true.
Lloyd, anything? I know this. You've studied this part too. Anything to add on that question or responding to it?
I agree with everybody's statements. You know, productive life hasn't been changed. It's based on the actual longevity in months, and that will be. I think the formula has gotten better now because we're weighting the third lactation higher than the second, and the second better, recognizing that these cows milk more with each succeeding lactation, and that will slightly tweak the bulls, and it will be a disadvantage to the bulls that are lower productive life, I believe. So a bull at 50 of protein, they don't necessarily produce 50 pounds in first lactation more than the other cows, but by time they're older, and then the big advantage is reducing that net herd replacement cost. That's such a big number. That's the low hanging fruit now, is how many dollars you're spending replacing your cows.
So this question came in right after Lloyd made a comment, and it's from our banking community, and you were talking about open cows and getting them pregnant. And Chris, you might want to chime in, and after Lloyd and Chris talked, if Chad or Jao have something to add here. But the question is, some of these herds are now 40 plus preg rate, but at a certain point, is there a diminishing return of getting to 45? You know, like, how, is there an optimum, or is it just sky's the limit? What have you been seeing, Lloyd?
Well, we had to, actually, our repro got good enough that our days in milk dropped to 153, and our target would be 170 days in milk. So we actually were able to back off breeding them until now mature cows, or I think we're breeding at 84 days as the target, and two-year-olds sooner, because we don't want them to stay two-year-olds very long because they milk less. And so we have a dual system. But by achieving that high preg rate, we have the confidence now that we don't have to breed them at 50 days or 55 days or 60 days like we used to. We're able to get the optimum days in milk, which in our herd we feel is in that 170 days range. We don't want to be over 200. We probably don't want to be at 153, because we were giving up milk because cows are more persistent than they used to be. Now you get a cow pregnant and they don't drop in milk like the cows in the 70s and 80s used to. You could always tell when a cow was pregnant, she dropped in milk at a certain point. Well, now the genetics today have really gone over that. And so that's what we're seeing. It gives you the luxury of knowing you're going to get more cows pregnant. And so you can target your optimum days in milk.
Chris, anything to add there?
Well, no, I think it's really interesting listening to Lloyd and how he approaches it. I think, obviously he's mentioned a couple times replacements are the third largest cost on a dairy farm typically. And it's a long-term investment, right? And so you want to take advantage of this investment, both from a private perspective and a public perspective, and we're just thinking about the utilization of resources. But, the reproductive program changes here and how that all gets worked into all of these indices. I mean, these indices are doing the work for you, right? They're doing the science behind it. And so you don't have to go and figure out how to trade off these different attributes. And that's really, it's a very useful tool, obviously.
Chad or Jao, anything to add on that preg rate diminishing return question?
Not a lot, other than there is a point. If you've got a 10% pregnancy rate, you're in a whole lot of trouble, right? And getting to 20% is a big deal. Going from 20% to 30% is a big deal, but it's not nearly as huge as going from 10 to 20. So there's a point that it's correct, but higher does give you more flexibility, as Lloyd was talking about.
Yeah. Just to go a little bit away from the previous comments, I mean, just reminded that genomic has provided us other tools also to improve reproductive performance, which are the identification of the carriers of those genetic defects that affect reproduction. And this has been a big gain on the planning of the matings. So that is a complementary tool that you can add to your planning in your farm.
And Jao, you almost, you're reading a slide deck here, and I know you can't see it. We have a veterinarian from Germany that sent this question in, and we're talking about reproduction right now, and certainly this is a big part of the health trait index in the net merit. In Europe, in the U.S., we use programs such as OVSync and PreSync and those kind of things as one of the tools. We do see more and more farms using collecting data and finding out when the activity rates are higher now as well, and breeding off of standing heats in that regard. Now, this German veterinarian asks, what would the U.S. preg rates be like if we wouldn't have access to programs like OVSync or PreSync? They're not as prevalent, obviously, in Europe. I'm going to give a little bit of an answer to that, and if anyone on our panel wants to chime in, go ahead and do so. I would say a decade ago, I would put more merit into that question and saying, hey, maybe the preg rates that are being achieved in the U.S. are a result of that. But when I look at the awards data on the dairy, and my coworker Caitlin does too, on the Dairy Cattle Reproduction Council, and we get entries from around the world, you're seeing good preg rates coming out of Italy, out of Germany, out of Ireland, out of China, and of course the U.S. and Canada and Mexico as well. And we get entries from all over on that. And we've changed the genetic base of the cow here over time. So is that contributing? Yes, but it's not near the contribution that was being made over a decade ago. So that's my crack at that answer, that question. But has anyone got something to add on that in terms of maybe, well, go ahead. I'm going to take the silence as we're good on that one. One of our people in our genetics community, and Chad talked about this a little bit here. You know, I think we got a lot of things right in the new net merit formula, but, you know, this is an ongoing science. And there's a bowl out there that Lloyd has used a lot over the year. And I hesitate to bring up bowl names, but this is a classic bowl here named O-Man. For those in the Holstein breed, he'll know him. He's minus for stature, and he's minus for dairy form. So he's making them shorter, but he's also making them what you would more less dairy form. And so, and the cows have performed, but right now his he isn't coming through the system looking as good as we all thought he would. He's minus for feed saved. What, and the question is, are we comfortable with that? Now, this is probably a question that got a little deeper than I wanted to ask it on this webcast here, because it's really a genetics question for our broader community. But does anyone want to give that one a stab?
As I've said, I think body weight is a really problematic trait, because what makes any animal heavier, light, is a function of many different things. It's their skeleton, it's their muscle, it's their fat, all these different things. And so I think it's really too crude for me. And I think that we need to move away from that. And in the past, we selected more on frame size. And during O-Man's day, we were selecting against frame size, and O-Man daughters were shorter, so that benefited him. And now, because we've added dairy form, we're selecting indirectly, we're selecting for cows that are thinner. And is that the direction we need to be moving in? I don't know. I want to see a little bit more work developing how is intake related to different body types. And that work just hasn't been done yet. So when we get that work done, that will be, to me, a pretty big improvement, because that is the one part of the formula I'm not fully on board with.
For the relief of our audience, I mean, Paul Van Rijn and his group, they have looked into the total emphasis given to dairy form. And because we increased the weight on productive life, and productive life is negatively correlated to dairy form, so the overall emphasis given to dairy form in this current review is not bigger than it was before, because of the resulting emphasis. But yes, this is a discussion and that we are having. Chad is part of our genetic evaluation methods committee as well, and we had this conversation many times. Also, Lloyd as part of the producer advisory committee. And it is certainly something that we should continue to look into. And as we get better tools, we should adjust again to reflect that. But we're not selecting for, going the wrong direction in the dairy form, or more or different direction that we were already going before. One thing is important to say why we are using body weight composite is that because body weight composite, we have a large number of animals that have that trait available. So that makes reliability of the evaluation much, much higher. And if we were going to use the actual weights that we had on the experimental cows, that will limit us to only a few thousand cows. So
I'd like to take a stab at it too. Old man with a bull, that's maybe 15 years ago, or I'm losing track of time, but we have reduced the body size in the general population. He was small for his day, but maybe not as small compared to today's current population, because he did have an influence through his sons and daughters that made sires an AI. I'm going to go with the science, even though, I think old man for his day would have been well above average on feed saved, but today maybe not so. They were shorter and heavier. The advantage that gave us was they're more fertile and had less lameness. And so we're going to continue to select maybe against dairy form, because I think dairy form is a curse, and extreme dairy form anyway. And so we're going to select the bulls that maybe make them shorter and wider and more fertile, and then let the chips fall where they may and try to get the most profitable. I think the important part here is we want the most overall, the cow that's most profitable overall. We don't care if one trait makes it more profitable, but if she is more profitable, that's what we want.
If I might just have one final comment, this just to me emphasizes why it's so important to use an index like net merit. If you use net merit, if that's our goal, we're not going to go too badly off the rails here. If you do single trait selection for feed saved, there are some high feed saved bulls that are not good for fertility and some other traits. Do not do single trait selection for feed saved. Use the economic selection index.
I
almost feel like we should quit there, because that was quite the crescendo, Chad. But out of respect to this last, and we're 2 minutes between the close here, Lloyd, real quick here. If you're running a high net merit and have a good preg rate, how many replacement heifers should we have? I mean, you got your cull rate down. So what are you doing there?
On 1,100 cows, we're running about 680 heifers, and we still have too many heifers calving in. So last month we sold 21 for dairy, and that's just 1 month. But you know, this is cumulative. We're building better cows, and every generation should be better, healthier than the previous generation. We're reaping the rewards of that. So I think our goal would be get down to 500. Only need 500 replacements on the farm, using average age calving at 23 months, and you know, that'd give us less than a 25% turnover rate with culls and deaths. And you know, one of the traits that's relatively new is livability, and we're big on livability, because that makes a huge difference. It's kind of like the acid test. If these cows don't die, you're going to get salvage value, the more that you get salvage value, you're going to have more to sell to somebody else or expand with one or the other. And that's going to be critical, reducing carbon footprint.
Mm-hmm. And what would have been sheer heresy a decade ago, probably, you know, beef on dairy. But now, because of all this progress we're making, we can plan that next generation. And Lloyd is doing that. And we can plan the calves we're going to sell or the steers we're going to raise. So with that, we are going to our next dairy live stream is going to be sustainability. What can we do on the farm? This conversation will be the focus of many conversations coming from consumers and leaders in many of the world's countries. Our goal on July 21 is to do just as the title implies, have a discussion as to what sustainability means on our farms, and we will demystify this overarching concept. The show will air in 2 weeks on Wednesday, July 21st, 2021 at 11 a.m. Central Daylight Time, and will be archived on the Hordes Dairyman YouTube channel and the podcast channels the very next day. We look forward to seeing you then. On behalf of Lloyd Holterman, Chris Wolf, Yao Durr, and Chad Dackow, thank you for joining us on this dairy live stream. Have a good day, everybody.